And Mr. O'Malley. Mr. O'Malley, I'm sorry.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. Counsel, good morning. Tom O'Malley for the defendant appellant, John Scott. Your Honors, on the morning of August 19, 2009, John Scott walked out of his home and into his driveway. He had a conversation in that driveway with the driver of a vehicle. The vehicle had pulled into the driveway. It was driven by a man named Reynolds. Now, Reynolds didn't own that vehicle. That vehicle was owned by a confidential informant. Fort Wayne police detectives had surreptitiously placed a recording device into the vehicle. Reynolds didn't know that the recording device was in the vehicle, and of course neither did Mr. Scott. The subject of the conversation that Scott and Reynolds had was the sale of heroin, and Scott agreed to sell him some heroin. The car, again, I emphasize, belonged to the confidential informant. Those facts are stipulated, that Scott didn't know the recording device was there. The conversation took place in his driveway. And it was also stipulated that Scott held a subjectively held a privacy interest in that conversation. He had a subjective interest in the privacy of that conversation. All of the facts were stipulated. The Supreme Court in City of Memphis versus Green noted that as to the accepted view that a man's home is his castle, the privacy interest in that home is just as great if that home is a crowded apartment complex or if it is an affluent single-family home. And so John Scott has the exact same privacy interest in his home on Fort Wayne's southeast side as let's say, a mansion on the Gold Coast of Long Island. The Supreme Court has held that the Fourth Amendment protects people, not places. And in that was Justice Harlan's concurring opinion in the Katz case, where it was held that an eavesdropping device, which was attached to a phone booth, a public phone booth, and based on the notion or the concept that the privacy interest is in the person, not the place.
Of course, those were the old days when there were actually phone booths, and
that's true.
Superman could go in and close it and change his clothes and all that. But now, if there are booths, they're open, and the expectation of privacy at one of those types of modern phone booths wouldn't be reasonable.
Would be diminished. That's correct, Your Honor. I would agree.
The photograph of the driveway where this car is attached to the stipulation. Is that that's the actual driveway?
That is the actual driveway.
No wall around the driveway or the front of the yard.
Your Honor. And that was, I'm sorry, that was part of the district court's opinion that Scott had not taken any steps to prevent a view into his driveway. He had not put up gates. He didn't put up keep out signs. And that's, I think, where the district court emphasizes that point to the exclusion of the idea that Scott doesn't care what people see in his driveway. Nobody saw a hand-to-hand transaction.
People expectation of privacy in the driveway that's so exposed. It's so close to the sidewalk that people can walk by. Would be hard to have a reasonable expectation of privacy about a conversation in that driveway.
Judge, his interest is in the privacy of the error. He wants to keep out, as they say, the uninvited ear. And the question is, since we've all, the only issue then becomes, does he have a, just as you said, does he have a reasonable expectation of privacy? If we look at the idea, if a husband goes out into his driveway and his wife comes out and starts to talk to him about whether or not he should clean out the garage or do some repairs to the lawn, can he expect that, provided their voices aren't raised, that the conversation is not subject to being recorded by the government or subject to being listened to.
Or overheard by a neighbor.
Yes. And that's the question. In another way, if something certainly everybody in this room is probably familiar with, if a neighbor walks across a driveway and starts to look for some free legal advice, and that conversation takes place in the driveway, can you expect that it takes place without an uninvited ear? And that is the issue in this case, Judge. I don't think that there's any other issue.
I have a curiosity.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that is... the time that the CI is in the car with what's his name?
Reynolds.
Reynolds, yeah. And any conversation during that time would be okay, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would, Your Honor.
And I'm just curious, between the motel and the gas station, to and from, that nobody said anything.
That is correct, Your Honor. There is no recording at that point.
Okay.
And there had been no prior dealings with between the CI and Reynolds, where Reynolds dropped the CI off and took the car and went someplace else.
No, Your Honor.
So this was a bit of a surprise to law enforcement that the CI got dropped off at the convenience store and that his car was then taken to the source.
So far as we know, Your Honor, but to cure that, the police simply could have turned off the recording device. I assume they can do it remotely, or they could have ignored the conversation. So I think that the fact that it was serendipity, so to speak, that the conversation was recorded doesn't negate the fact that it's an intrusion on Scott's privacy.
But it wouldn't have been an intrusion if, after getting back in the car, I say, okay, we're all set, or something or other, or say, yeah, I got what we need. Apparently no conversation when both CIA and Reynolds are in the car.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that is... really interesting when you got a live recording there and nobody says anything.
Yes, Your Honor.
See, I could have. Somebody said it might be a good idea if you say something while you're in the car, but I guess that didn't occur.
And from the record, Your Honor, we would also say that Reynolds meets the CI at what's called the Pine Haven Motel. He makes a phone call, presumably, to Scott, but we don't know who he called. We don't know. It's a presumption that it's his. That it's Reynolds' supplier that he calls. And then he drives the CI to the Marathon gas station and drops him off there. Then he goes to Scott's residence. And the government has suggested that we should, the test would be Key versus City of Rowlett, which is a Fifth Circuit case. And they say to explore this privacy interest, we should look at the volume and location of the conversation, the potential for others to overhear or record the conversation, and affirmative actions that the speakers took to shield the conversation. And I think as we look at those three factors, where did the conversation take place? Well, it took place in his driveway. It didn't take place at the motel. It didn't take place in the car, and it didn't take place at the Marathon.
Mr. O'Malley, would it matter if the conversation took place 7 or 10 feet further out, and so they're talking on the sidewalk in front of his driveway versus his driveway, and does that matter? Would that matter to your analysis?
Your Honor, I would say no, because in that sense we're saying it could have taken place in a phone booth, although, as Judge Tinder points out, we don't have those anymore. But we've already determined that the driveway, or this court has already determined that a driveway unblocked is not curtilage. So I think that once we're out of the house and out of the front door, we're not in curtilage anymore.
So, and under a hypothetical, say there are two people standing on a street corner, and they look around, there's no one around, but they're on a street corner, and they talk to one another in a regular tone of voice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Would the speakers have a reasonable expectation of privacy as to that conversation?
I believe they do, Your Honor, and that's because the Fourth Amendment protects people, not places. I'm into my rebuttal time, if I may. Thank you, Your Honor.
Holler.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I guess to pick up where Mr. O'Malley left off, the government's position is that defendants generally do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in conversations that take place on street corners, and we believe that the case law bears that out. And in addition, we believe that the district court in this case correctly ruled that Mr. Scott failed to manifest any objectively reasonable expectation of privacy in his own outdoor, open-air conversation with Mr. Reynolds. And that's principally because there's no evidence in the record that the defendant took any steps whatsoever to shield that conversation, even though many were readily available. Under those circumstances, there is a risk that he could have been heard by an eavesdropper that simply would not exist in his own home or in a sealed phone booth, as you pointed out, Judge Tinder, or in a private office.
Now, if Scott had gotten into the car and made sure the windows were rolled up, then you would have had a problem, wouldn't you?
I think we would have had a problem.
There is an expectation of privacy in an automobile with the windows rolled up.
I think there is, Your Honor. I have a slight caveat that we put a footnote in our opinion about, because there are a number of cases about two defendants, for example, talking in the back of a police car. And I think there's some question both on standing issues and based on the fact that you're in somebody else's car, do you have an expectation that whoever the owner of the car is has not installed listening devices in the car? The police frequently do. In this case, because the car that he got into was not Reynolds' car, and there's no evidence that he
didn't get in the car, though, did he?
Understood he didn't. But so that's why my only caveat. I do think in general, though, that what the case is like, Key and the other cases, there's not really a ton of cases in this area, but the cases do suggest that really one of the key factors is, did you take any steps whatsoever to shield the conversation? Were there readily available steps you could have taken? By getting in the car, by sealing up the windows so that no one outside of the car could have heard, I think that would be one step he could have taken. Another step he could have taken are the very steps he did take 5 days later in the second buy, which is Reynolds got out of the car and any conversation that occurred inside the house. Another thing that could have happened if a drug dealer doesn't want to let another drug dealer in his house is they could have gone in the garage, which is a less, there's less of a reasonable expectation of privacy in the garage than in the house. But if they went into a garage, like a sealed booth, pull the car in, pull into a, and while I agree in principle with Mr. O'Malley that a house is a house and that there are no distinctions between a rich mansion and a poor house, if you pull into a private property and you pull into a carriage house or something like that, that's going to be different than in the public hall of a duplex or in another area where you can hear conversations. If you look at Jackson, if you look at Larios, if you look at some of these other cases, I think that the reality is that even if you're in your own home, if you're put in a position where there's an adjoining wall where you're talking loud enough that your neighbors can hear you, then that certainly is a factor that would be taken into consideration. Just as under the plain view doctrine, if the police officers are standing outside your property and you're doing a drug deal in front of a plate glass window, the fact that you're in your house doesn't mean that you have some expectation of privacy. You have an expectation of privacy that there isn't going to be thermal imaging, that there aren't going to be transmitters put inside the house, but you don't have an expectation of privacy that everything you do within those walls is going to be concealed unless you take steps to conceal them. As the court in Nerver said, close the curtains to the house or to the hotel room, and you've demonstrated an expectation of privacy that you haven't otherwise. And we believe that's sort of the situation here. This was an open-air conversation. It occurred outdoors. It occurred a few feet from neighboring houses, from the sidewalk, from the street. And under those circumstances, that's what occurred here. I think that...
Did law enforcement have an idea that Reynolds was going to take the CI's car and go to the source without the CI in it?
There's nothing in the record on that, Your Honor. Judge Springman notes that there's nothing in the record and there's no suggestion of that. I mean, I would represent to the court, no, this had not occurred before where they had these buys before. They had no idea that Reynolds was going to take the car to get the drugs, at least on the first buy. And it's unclear whether what kind of recording device was even used on the second buy, because that's not even part of the case. But as to the first buy, which is when this recording occurred, nothing of that sort happened.
We can only speculate that this is just the way Scott operates, that he doesn't want the same car coming in all the time, and they use the customer's car, I guess. That's weird. But the thing that's weird to me is when both of them, the CI and Reynolds, are in the car, that nobody says anything.
When both the CI and Reynolds in the car are in the car?
Between the motel and the gas station, to and from.
Yeah, I didn't really I'm not sure where that is in the record, Your Honor. I respect Mr. O'Malley's representation, but, I mean, there isn't any debate about any conversation that occurred there because
well,
any conversation...
That would be an obvious place for the conversation to take place. The CI, would you get what we need or, you know, some kind of a conversation that the transaction's going on instead
well,
of just
no,
everybody just being quiet.
I don't actually... I did not read the record to say that there was no conversation at all. I read the record to simply reflect that there's no dispute that as to any conversations that occurred at that point in time, they would not be suppressed because...
Not then. We see CI in the car. That's a given, right?
Yeah, so if the CI is in the car...
He knows what it's being recorded, which...
I understand, but Judge Manion, my point is just there's the reason there's nothing in the record on that is that there's no dispute that those conversations could come into evidence.
I know, but if something important was said, is what I'm saying, just as apparently the one sentence they put in the affidavit, what they said while he's leaning on the car in the driveway, as opposed to when they're both in the car, it just seemed to me that you've got this recording all set up, I assume it's running while they're driving the car.
Well, I agree with Your Honor that there's a lot more information that could have been put in the affidavit. But the reality is that state court affidavits are often relatively bare bones, and I think that this one was. But there's more than enough information, even
but
if the court were excluded.
It seems to be fairly detailed, but that's all right.
Well, often they are detailed. This is only, I mean, I've seen affidavits in federal cases that run eight to ten pages long. This is only a couple of pages. So I think that because the focus in this case was on that particular sentence, because that is what was put in the affidavit, because, I think in affidavits in general, you don't necessarily lay out the entire case and the entire investigation. You put in the best evidence, and this was very strong evidence, when they're discussing Ye and when they're discussing drugs. So
this whole issue is the privacy issue, and that one sentence occurs when there's just the two of them that don't know about the recording. That's all. That's
right.
The only reason
I'm
asking
it.
If there were anything during the to and from when both of them are in the car, it seems that'd be real useful. But if it's
well,
not there,
it would
it's
be.
Not there.
It would be. But I think it's important to keep in mind we're on a motion to suppress and we're on off of a conditional plea. So, you know, if this case were eventually go to trial, it's not about this heroin buy. It's about all the drugs that we later seized in the search warrant. And he hasn't even been charged with possession of heroin or with these particular very small heroin buys. He's charged with the 900 and some grams of cocaine that was seized in the subsequent search warrant.
And there's a lot of other things beyond that little conversation that went on in the transaction.
Sure, and there's all kinds of other information, and much of that was placed in the search warrant, which is why, although the defendant didn't talk about the second issue, and the court, of course, needn't reach the second issue unless it finds a reasonable expectation of privacy that would cause that to be excluded, for those reasons as well, based on what information is left under Illinois versus Gates, the warrant would still be valid, and all of the drugs and everything would still come into evidence in this case.
Is there anything in the record that would indicate where the officer was observing this conversation was in relationship to the driveway?
No, there's not, Your Honor. I mean, this is a very unusual case for me, honestly, on appeal, which is that the entire facts are contained on pages 25 through 34 of the defendant's appendix. There are no other facts because the parties stipulated to the facts. There's the search warrant. There's the photograph. It's a color photograph in the actual record itself. So other than that, there's really nothing else to see in the record other than what you've seen on the pages before you. The only thing that's clear from the stipulated facts and from the warrant is that Officer Coonrod, I believe his name is, was in a position to observe the transaction. Where exactly he was located, though, has not been made clear from the record. But what is, I think, relevant to the record is, and I guess the only other thing I could point out about the record is that this case took search took place, or the buy took place in August. And it's clear from the picture that the picture was taken in the winter. So you can see all these trees in the summer as well. The trees would have all had leaves. There'd be even more foliage and things like that. That would mean that there could be someone in the area, like the detective, who could be either concealed in a car. Clearly, he must have been either if it's hidden or in some sort of car in a position where the defendant couldn't see him. I would also, I guess, briefly dispute the defendant's notion that two people who are standing outside have a reasonable expectation of privacy in their conversation, just in general. Whether you're talking about a conversation with your wife or a client or anybody else, if you're in an outdoor area, I think common courtesy suggests that people in general should not be listening to your conversation. But what the case law and what most of these cases say is common courtesy does not dictate your constitutional rights. And certainly I've been in public areas and in airports and in all of these locations where I sometimes think to myself, I can't believe these people are talking about this in front of me. But that doesn't mean that those people have an expectation of privacy. And it may well be the case that, you know, in hindsight, the defendant thinks, why did I do this? But he is in the southeast side of Fort Wayne, which is a somewhat high crime area. He may have engaged in these deals before. He is talking, if you read the facts, he isn't saying, hey, do you want this heroin for $250? They are using drug lingo or code words that in trials we often have to interpret to jurors. What does yay mean? What is a ball? What is a quarter? And he may, for those reasons, just have assumed, hey, you know, I don't really see anybody. If there is a neighbor around, they've been around forever. They either don't know that I deal drugs, don't understand, or don't care. And all of those facts suggest that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy on the facts of this particular case. If the court has no further questions, I would simply ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you. Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you, Your Honors. I think it's ironic that if Mr. Scott had entered the automobile as suggested by counsel and shut the door, the conversation would have been recorded, and I suppose this is a poor pun under the situations with crystal clarity. But that's the case. Justice Scalia, in the Jones decision, talked at length about Katz and the addition to the Fourth Amendment interpretation. It's not an add-on to the Fourth Amendment. It's an additional interpretation of the Fourth Amendment, that the Fourth Amendment, according to Justice Harlan and according to the courts thereafter, protects people, not places. So if as counsel says, the house where the conversation takes place is in the driveway, is just feet from somebody else's house, it's also just feet from his front door. And so I think we come to the point where we have to say, is Katz good law or isn't it? Does that Fourth Amendment really protect people and not places? This isn't a conversation that takes place in an open field. It's not a conversation that takes place in a phone, a phone area in a shopping mall, as some of the cases we've looked at during the briefing took place. There was one that took place in a graveyard. That's not what happens in this case. This case takes place in a driveway. We know that Scott didn't go to the Pine Haven Motel. We know that he didn't go to the Marathon station. So he did take some precautions. He has that conversation in his driveway, and apparently he requires that Reynolds must drop off the buyer. He deals with somebody he knows. And we also know that the conversation could not be overheard by Coonrod, Officer Coonrod. Assistance of the hidden recording device.
You have to wrap your thoughts up.
Yes, Your Honor. The only other thing I would mention is in answer to Judge Lee's question, where was Coonrod planted? We don't know, but typically the Fort Wayne police would use the driveway of a cooperating neighbor in these cases, and they don't divulge, for obvious reasons, who that neighbor was. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.